Hi, I'm Ari Lewis. This is Mastering the Attention Economy podcast presented by Brand Street. I discuss how companies and creators can earn attention without paying for it. I interview creators, operators, and founders on building brands through creative unpaid marketing and media. If you want to learn more and become a member of our community, visit brandstreet.co/join. If you use the code Ari, you'll receive 25% off your subscription. This week, I interview Ryan Sneddon. Ryan is the founder of Naptown Scoop, a local media company covering the city of Annapolis, Maryland. In this interview, we discuss the state of local media, growing his newsletter using Instagram, and building a dedicated subscriber list. I hope you enjoy.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, Ryan, you know, I always like jumping into things with guests. You run a local media company, and I thought it would be an interesting first question to talk about. You run a news company, but you don't actually enjoy the news. So what made you go into a industry that you despise?
Well, I think going into it because you want to change something is like the classic startup thing. People are like, if you hate the way it's done now, you could probably go in and change it. Or if you think you have a better way, and if you think you have a better way, I mean, if you hate something, you could probably come up with a better way to do it. And yeah, I can't stand all of the, like how invasive news is and how I think that they just think that they're the, and when I say they, I mean like the big traditional news companies think they're like the end all be all who has the last word and everything. And I just don't think that's the way that news should be done. I think the very basic purpose of news is to tell people what's going on in whatever sort of industry you've decided to cover. So if you're covering business news, you tell the people what they need to know, not what you think is going to get you the most clicks on your website. But unfortunately, that's how news goes for almost all the media companies out there.
So on that note, you know, do you think that the role of media is being disrupted? You know, I recently read an article which talked about Blaze TV, and I don't know how familiar you are with it, but it's a conservative news site. And for my guests who are listening who probably haven't heard of it, it's a big conservative news site. I hadn't actually heard of it until I read this article. And they're profitable, making tons of money. And one of the interesting aspects of it is it talked about how the news is shifting from trustworthy content to authenticity. Do you think it's more important to build a relationship with the audience that unfortunately is not actually based on the accuracy of the news, but really the authenticity of the relationship? What are your thoughts on that?
I would say I think it should be built on the trustworthiness of the news, not the authenticity of the relationship. Like, you just get people that agree with your slant and you only give them your slant. Unfortunately, that's how news works and that's how it's sold, because it does work. But no, I wish that it were built on the trustworthiness of the information. I try to my best to not have a slant in what I cover with my company. And whether I like something or not, if it happens, I feel like I have a duty to tell the people that it happened. I got in trouble for this a couple of times because there was a Trump rally that was happening in the town and I covered it. And I also cover things in like a funny style. Like, I like to make jokes about what's happening. And so it was a Trump car parade. And so I made the headline that day, Truckin' for Trump. And I thought it was funny, but that was the most popular unsubscribe day ever. And some people were even like, I can't believe you're printing this. Like, what are you even thinking? And I'm like, look, it's happening. And we always make jokes about stuff, so we're not going to not make jokes about this. But yeah, I do wish that it was more built on the trustworthiness of the news rather than the relationship of the company to its readers or subscribers or whatever their audience is.
So how do you balance, like, we're talking about subject lines here, how do you balance, you know, giving accurate information versus giving, you know, that clickbaity information? Because it's, you know, true, obviously, that these headlines are positioned in a way so people click, but they're not necessarily representative of, you know, the story itself. How do you balance the two? And, you know, as someone who is being both the editor as well as the writer, you know, how do you resolve those conflicting issues internally as well?
Well, I think the medium that I use really lets that all play out on its own, because I only send through email. That is my primary thing. It's the only way that I deliver. And so I don't actually need to really worry about clickbait, because my purpose is also not to get the people to click on the links in the email. If they want to, they can, but I don't write any of that myself. So I'm not trying to send them to my site so that I can get ad dollars from the site. I'm just trying to let them be as informed as possible. So I'll summarize the stories that I link to, and they can read the story if they want to. But my goal is not that they would actually, that they have to click on that link. So I think because of that, I'm insulated from clickbaiting, because I'm not, clicks are not my intention. My intention is to tell them the whole story. And even with these kind of jokester headlines, which don't happen all the time, but like with the jokes and in the headlines and the jokes in the story, I think you can still get 90% of what's happening. And if you want that last 10% that you can click through. And most people really don't. The click rates on the articles are pretty low, and people just click on what they're interested in. Or if there's just a wild story that's clickbait or not, it's gonna get clicked on. Like this week, there's a house in the neighborhood, or one of the neighborhoods in the town that I cover. And they literally put a 35-foot long Christmas light penis on their roof. And obviously, that's going to get clicked on, clickbait or not. That's just so wild. And then, even more wild, somebody's house burned down while they were out trying to find this place. So, like, that you don't have to clickbait that. The giant illuminated penis on somebody's roof saved this person's life. And like I said, some things just get clicked on no matter what. But my intention is not actually to get them to click. And so I think that insulates me from clickbait. I also hate clickbait. That's in my Twitter bio.
So, that story is interesting, and I think it could connect ne well with our next topic, which is how do you know the content you're putting out, resonates with the audience, right? Because you all, based on, your website, yeah, you have the occasional jokes, but it's probably a fairly serious audience in the sense that they want to be informed about local news, right? Someone who is subscribing to it is not like your typical, jokester listening to comedy. It's like, I want to be informed of what's happening in my, backyard. So how do you make these decisions of like, here's relevant content, here's more humorous content that could be described in a more controversial way? How do you balance those two? And I guess really the bigger question that I'm getting at is, how do you learn the audience interests so that you can not only retain your audience, but grow it to get more subscribers?
I think to know that you have to define your audience. And this is something that I learned from Morning Brew, which you'll probably hear me reference a lot because that's like my North Star in building a company like this. But you define your ideal subscriber. So for Morning Brew, I think it's the what is it, the modern business leader, and they write everything with that person in mind. And I write with the engaged citizen in mind, engaged citizen of their city, meaning. And so I really don't have to look at each individual. I do look at each individual story and ask if it's relevant. But really, the question is not, is my audience going to care about this? But like, would somebody who loves to live in their city and wants to know what's going on, would they care about this? Would they need to know this? And if the answer is yes, then it gets included because that is who my audience is made up of. And as far as balancing humor and seriousness, I don't think it's a that big of a problem. Because it's the seriousness doesn't take away from the actual news. It just presents it in a more fun way. And that's something that people really love about it. That's the most common feedback I get is people like the personality that's injected into the writing. And I actually, this is another great lesson for anybody who produces content or anything, is to let your customers write your copy for you. So one of my customers, or I guess readers, not customers, because it's a free publication, but he said, man, this is so great. I love the local news with personality. And I was like, local news with personality. That's a great tagline. So I made that that's my landing page tagline. I put it in all my social bios. It was way better than what I had before. So that's, people love that. They love the personality in there, but they still know what's going on because the humor doesn't take away from the truth of what's happening.
So Ryan, that was really, a good answer, and sort of I wanted to integrate a question we had from the audience, which was, How did you get your first 100 subscribers to the newsletter when you started it? And then did anything change to get it to the first 1,000? What did you just notice in terms of like those growth tactics for the early days that worked for you?
I grew it in kind of an unpopular way on like the newsletter community of Twitter. I did the first 100 was hard to remember, but I think almost exclusively through paid acquisition of Facebook ads. I knew that I was willing to put some money into this. It's not just a side project. This is my full-time thing. So I was not afraid to run some Facebook ads. And I actually started running them a week before I sent the first email. And I sent the first one to 60 people. And then I could go back and look, but I'm pretty sure I sent the second one to over 100, just continuing to run those Facebook ads. Actually, I know I did because at that point they were a week apart. And so I was running basically another week of Facebook ads. But the tactics to go from 100 to 200 or 100 to 1,000, they do change. The majority of the list has grown through paid acquisition, but I'd say two other main avenues of adding subscribers that I used for the next 1,000 and then 2,000 were I made an Instagram page for the newsletter and I'm very active on it. I followed like every business that I could think about. I follow certain important people in the town or people who put out news, and I can, because I try to look at every Instagram post so I know what's happening. I spend like way too many hours a day on Instagram. But I think I'm not sure exact numbers of how many have come from Instagram, but a decent chunk of the list has come from the Instagram. And then the second tactic is not exactly something that's actionable. It's referrals. It's grown a lot through referrals. I've noticed that there's a ton of subscribers that come from just typing naptownscoop.com into their browser, which I imagine is only happening because somebody tells them about it. I noticed there's a ton from also just Google searching Naptown Scoop, which again is probably because someone's telling them about it. And then the actual trackable referrals I have through my referral software account for 25% of the list right now. So I can know, I know that a lot are coming from referrals, which is really encouraging because if people are sharing it, that means they must like it. Yeah, there's no real secrets to going from 1,000 to 2,000. The biggest growth hack, and this is actually to steal a tweet from you, the biggest growth hack is just consistent publishing. You have to stick to something. For me, it's not really an option. Like I'm always bewildered when I see people who are like, oh, I skipped a newsletter this week, or they're like really impressed that they haven't skipped one in the month. And I'm like, skipping is not an option for me. I set a deadline. It's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and it's going to go out whether I'm tired or not. So just publishing all the time, not being afraid of doing paid acquisition on Facebook. I think a lot of newsletter creators are afraid of that. It does cost some money. I think I've put like $3,000 into it, which is a lot, but also not a lot in the grand scheme of things. And then I think being active on social, Ari and I, we've been talking about, TikTok and how to get active on there with it. I'm interested in trying that. I don't think Twitter is really a hot place in the city where I'm covering, but Instagram definitely is. So being active where your people are is super important. And Facebook is kind of active, but it's such a mess that I don't really feel like getting involved in there aside from the paid acquisition. I don't really want to go out and be like creating posts on there. To me, Instagram is just more fun and has provided even great relationships with some of the businesses and the people that read the newsletter.
Yeah. And one question to just add to that answer as well is there anything on day one that like now that you talked about all these things and paid acquisition that like you would have done immediately different now that you've launched this?
Yeah, we're 4 months in, and I think something that I had to think a lot about this question. It was hard to find an answer because like my paid acquisition strategy hasn't changed that much. My writing strategy hasn't changed that much. The format of the email has, but not in a way that I think was like essential to know on day one. But if I had to think about it, and this is an unfair advantage for a local publisher that any other kind of publisher really doesn't have, is that actually going and being in the city has always been worth it. I've met at least one person every time. I've met business owners. I've met readers. I've just like handed my phone to people in a store that I was talking to for them to sign up. And so like actually going and being in the city is every single time it's been worth it. And in the beginning, I was like, no, I need to spend my time writing. I need to spend my time looking for content. And you know, when I'm in the city, I'm not paying attention to Instagram as closely because I'm on the run, but it's always been worth it. And so I guess if you were to take that from a publisher who's not local, it's just always going to where your people is, or people are, I guess. That's horrible grammar. Where you're going, where your people are, is always going to be worth it. And if you're fortunate enough to for that to be like a physical, actually be with them in a city or at like a conference for your industry, totally worth it. And it might just be being active on social where they are.
So one of the big things that has been a recurring theme on this podcast, is yes, it's important to build a social audience, but it's even more important to own your audience through, you know, newsletters. And obviously you talked about the Morning Brew being an influence, but you know, the Morning Brew started, you know, I think it's been 5, 6 years now, but email's been out, you know, 25 years. You know, why do you think there's sort of been this resurgence over the past few years of newsletters being such a popular delivery format? And now everyone's like, and especially in your arena, local media, the future is, you know, digital and newsletters. Like, is this something that you think is a new phenomenon, or do you just think like everyone's finally going, oh, it's always been there, but now we think it's new because people it's popularized now. Like, what are your thoughts on sort of this email newsletter renaissance, so to speak?
I definitely don't think it's a new thing. Like you said, Morning Brew, I think, I don't know how long they've been around. Probably 5 or 6 years sounds right. But like the Skim's been around, I think, for longer than them. There, and the Hustle, I think, was like 2016 or something. It's so they've been around for a while, but I think it's coming into the mainstream. And I still think that it's early. Like, you don't have giant companies, like, not every giant company has a newsletter now. You have giant newsletter companies, relatively, like you have Axios, who's out there being newsletter first and crushing it, and they're pretty huge. But like, you don't have every company who has billions of dollars out there with their own gigantic newsletter. So I think we're still early in it. And obviously, yeah, email is not new. I don't know. It's probably been around since the 90s, or even earlier. I don't know. I really don't know. I should know. But we find new ways to use things, or even just like slightly different ways to use things. Like cars. Cars are not new. They've been around forever, but like now we're having electric cars, and we just find better ways to use the things we already have. I think email is the absolute best delivery network or method, probably aside from text messaging. But the bonus of emails over texts is that it's more acceptable to have a long email, like with lots of information, like mine, versus a super long text message. If I was sending just quick blips, I would be like all in on texting, because I think that is the best. It has way better open rates than email. It's even more direct. There's no spam filter on texting yet. Maybe there will be eventually, but I just think email is the best. And yeah, you own your subscribers. You talked about that. I'm huge on that. I think another reason why it's so popular is people always talk about like, oh, the algorithm change is going to ruin me on Google or social or whatever it is. And that doesn't happen on email. You own your email addresses and you can go anywhere. I mean, some people, if you're like running your own web server and have your own custom setup, then even if the company that you like, you're not using a company to send your emails, they can't even shut you down. And even if you do that, back up your list regularly, and if they shut you down, you can go to any of the other dozens that will allow you to send emails. So they're really, it is the best way to own your audience. Email. I'm super bullish on email. People always talk about newsletter fatigue and that email's dead. Newsletter fatigue only happens if your newsletter's not good. And if you're running a great product, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I think there's only newsletter fatigue if you're a power user on Twitter. One of the things that I always use as a barometer is, you know, being in Cleveland, you know, 99% of the population has not heard of Substack or really subscribes to any email newsletters. So I think, you know, the barometer for if there's a bubble is going to a Midwest city and ask if they've heard of Substack. If, you know, 80% of the population is saying no, there's not a bubble yet. But
Yeah, we're far from that.
But you know, you talked about Axios and sort of expanding, you know, Axios expanding into local media, newsletters. Can you know, sort of talk about like what your plan is for the Naptown Scoop? You know, are you going to end up competing with Axios in other cities? And you know, I saw your tweet with the mayor of Miami, and maybe Miami will be your next city. Just talk about like where you see the newsletter going.
Yeah, I think one of the readers asked like what was the 5-year goal for it. The 5-year goal that makes me like nervous, which is like the big what do they call it? Like the big hairy audacious goal or something. It's like some kind of framework thing. But yeah, like the big scary goal that makes me nervous is in 5 years I'd love it to be in 100 cities. I want to take this all across the country. I don't just want to leave it in one city. And you know, the roadmap to get there, I don't know, big things are going to have to happen, but I am trying to launch a second city this year. And well, I guess not this year, 2020, but in 2021, whenever this is going to be released, I don't even know. But I want to launch a new one by August of 2021. I think that that is not really a reasonable goal. It would require high achieving to make that happen. So that's why I want to do it. But yeah, I just thought, why not? I'll shoot my shot with the mayor of Miami, see if we can open up a conversation about this, because I do know one of my influences in this space has launched other cities through partnerships with the local government or the Chamber of Commerce. And so, you know, that was just a tweet that means like basically nothing. The mayor of Miami's been super active on Twitter in the last couple of weeks. Whether or not something actually comes out of that, super low likelihood, but I am going to message him or try and email him or something and see if we can get that conversation started, because I don't have enough money to make that happen now. But I think through a partnership with the Chamber of Commerce or the city itself, interesting things could happen there.
Yeah, and I know, you know, you're referring to 6 a.m. city. So for those of you who are listening, the real trick to growing an audience is get a local government to subsidize your product when you enter into it. So then you have a bunch of money to go and build an audience without having to bootstrap it.
Which is what I would want to happen in Miami, because if they would give a grant to make that happen and also use, I mean, the mayor's 40,000 Twitter followers and however many the other city social accounts have or whatever audience they have, you could jumpstart it so quickly to a point where you wouldn't have to pay for a lot of audience and you'd be getting to a point where you could get advertisers quickly. That would be a humongous win for me.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that I've talked a lot on the podcast, and is you know not something I've originated, but sort of this idea of audience first products. You know, you come from a software development background, so like you could develop products if you wanted to, but you chose to go to audience first route. Do you think that more and more people who want to develop digital products, it actually makes sense to, you know, develop the audience and then go and figure out a product rather than do it the other way around? You know, I know you have biases, but sort of like, what are your thoughts on, you know, again, this shift that we're seeing, whether it's actually a shift or it's always been there, and we just haven't been calling it a shift until now, of audience first products and building the audience before you build a, you know, a digital product.
Yeah, I think there's no point in building a product before you have an audience. I mean, why would you spend time building something if you don't know that people are going to like it and use it? So like even right now, if the audience were to come to me and say, we want this to be totally different, I'm not really set in my ways of like, this is exactly how the newsletter looks and this is how it's done. The point of it is to tell the audience what they need to know. And if most of them wanted to hear it in a different way, then I would be willing to switch what we're doing, because that is the point. The point is to tell them what's going on. And however they want to know that is how they should get to know that. But yeah, going out and building a product beforehand is just too much risk for me. I don't want to do that. I think if I was really encouraged by running my ads before I sent my first newsletter, getting 60 people to sign up with like probably only like $50 of ad spend. It was a great acquisition cost there. But if nobody had responded to that ad and said like, yeah, this is something that I'm interested in, I probably wouldn't have been as excited to start it. I'm a big fan of smoke testing like that. And of course, I intended to send at least one anyway, but I know it's a popular strategy to like run an ad for something that you don't even have made and see, is there any interest in this? And if there is with the ad, then you can say, hey, like we're behind on production, and you can delay the orders, or you can just be like, hey, actually, it's not quite ready yet. I'll refund you and let you know when it is ready. And if nobody responds to it positively at all, you can just be like, oh, well, I'll refund the few people who did, and this obviously wasn't a good idea. But yeah, I'm all about audience first, find out what people want and then make it. And don't just make it and hope that that's what people want. And there's certain cases where that doesn't hold true. Like thinking most specifically about cars, like Henry Ford famous quote, he's like, if I'd asked people what they want, they just would have said faster horses. And if you asked the people, if Elon Musk had asked people what they want, they just would have said more fuel efficient cars, not electric cars. But he was like, no, I know what's best to do here. And there's certain cases where product first is definitely the right way to go. But it's really an art, not a science, to pick when.
Yeah, and I guess with all that being said, you know, talking about like this audience development and content strategy, I know we touched on it a bit, but I'd like to ask it in a more direct way. And I think it's a big question for a lot of the people that are listening. You know, we have, I would say the audience is mostly made up of marketing people and media people. It's sort of this balance between, you know, is it important to create good content? Is it important to like really focus on growth and the content to be, you know, good, but not like the best content? Like, how do you balance and think about that approach of like, you know, you only have limited time in the day and you can't do both things perfectly. You know, what are you trying to achieve? Like every day, or you send it 3 times a week. So I should say the Monday, Wednesday, Friday of like, is there a bar you're trying to hit with the content? And then like once you hit that bar, you focus on growth. How do you balance those two things?
Yeah, so, and maybe this isn't the right way to look at it, but this is the way that I look at it for now. I want the email with the 3 emails a week to be as perfect as possible. I don't want anyone to look at that and have any reason to be like, oh, yeah, this isn't what I thought it was, or this isn't good, this isn't valuable to me. So I put most of my time into that because I believe that if that's good, then people will share it and it will grow. And people will be happy when they do read it, new people, so they'll stay. But I what all the other content that is like a funnel to the newsletter, like the Instagram content that I produce and the articles that I write, kind of focused on SEO and just thinking about what is something that could be shared, like could I profile a local restaurant and they'll share it and that'll expand the reach of it. All of that kind of what I would call secondary content needs to be like good and really like good bordering on great, but it doesn't need to be perfect. I put most of my effort into the emails because that's the main product and everything else is just a funnel into that.
Great, great. That makes a lot of sense, and I think that was a good answer. So, as we begin to wrap things up, you know, the last question that I always like to ask, which I guess I asked in a bit of a different way in the beginning, but to ask it in the way I like to at the end, is, you know, what is one takeaway for the reader that, you know, you would like them to know from, you know, the past 4 months of running this podcast, or not podcast, the newsletter, that they can apply to their work?
I think of, I'm going to cheat and I'm going to pick two. First one is going to be just shoot your shot. You never know what's going to happen. You know, maybe that tweet with the mayor of Miami will lead to a potential partnership to bring me down to Miami. That would be incredible. But the answer is always no unless you ask. Another time, the Ridge Wallet sponsored Morning Brew's newsletter and then tweeted about it because Morning Brew has this amazing advertiser affinity where people are like excited to announce that they partnered with them. And so I just like hijacked that and I said, oh, you guys should sponsor me next. And then like 2 hours later, they had already paid for an ad and they did. So you just never know what the answer is going to, well, you always know the answer is going to be no unless you ask for something. So just ask, take the shot. You never know what's going to happen. And make sure that you do it in a way that's like, like lopsided upside, like low effort, high reward. You know, the tweet to the Ridge Wallet took like 30 seconds to make, ended up making me more like a lot of money. So that was way asymmetric upside. The tweet to the mayor of Miami took like 5 minutes to think about what I should say, and then that could have obviously huge upside. So make little bets that could pay out big, and always just make them, make a lot of them. You never know what's going to happen. And the second one would be just don't get distracted. Like for me, my product is email. So I'm not going to do anything else. If I do anything else, it's only going to be to grow the email list. Obviously I do everything myself because I'm bootstrapping this. I've had local businesses ask me to run their social, to rebuild their websites, and it would be great to make a little bit of money from that, but I don't have time to do that. So I have to say no and don't get distracted. Just keep building whatever you set out to build, build that. And that's not to say like you can't pivot and decide to do something else, but if you do that, like really pivot. And if you're gonna not build A and build B, then do that and don't build A and B at the same time. Just don't get distracted. Don't get distracted and shoot your shot. Two big takeaways.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And Ryan, thanks so much for joining us. For those who are looking to, maybe follow you on social media, what are your handles? And I'll make sure to put them in the show notes as well.
Yep, I'm the Sneddy Mobbin on Twitter. That's really the only one I use. I actually deleted my personal Instagram. So follow me on there, and that's where I talk basically only about email.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, thanks so much, and until next time, everyone.
Thanks, Ari.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider giving us 5 stars on iTunes. If you're listening to us on YouTube, consider hitting the like button and commenting on what you enjoyed. I'd really appreciate it.